Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today, we actually have two guests for once. Not only is Dan here, but we also have Corey, who handles our women's basketball coverage at the blog. Say hi to everybody, Corey.
What's up, everyone? How's it going?
You might recall Corey from some of the game recaps we did during the football season. He and Julian Wiggum did a great job. Kind of talking about things right afterward, a little more football focused than the usual jokes, garbage, Tulane related nonsense that that Dan and I usually jump into.
We tried, we did our best with it, I think. So appreciate that positive review there.
Hey, as long as people listened to both, I was fine with it.
Right, absolutely. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and the only time people really seem to drop us when Dan and I implore them to. Actually, no, that's not true. People, when we implore people not to listen, they actually listen more and then complain about it more.
That's interesting. I don't know. I like to listen to a little bit of both. You know, get both sides. You get the fun commentary, then you get the, hey, here's what the heck happened, and figure it out. So I like to try to mix that in, and you guys took that to the next level, I think, with the varied topics, if you will. So no, Julian and I had a blast doing it. God, he's so smart. He knows exactly what he's talking about when it comes to that game. So that was just, you know, more cool for me to work with him and to pick his brain about it. But no, I'm really glad to be joining the show for hoop season and coming down to the, you know, final countdown for the women's team, and tournament time's coming right around the corner, and it's pretty exciting around here in regards to that women's team. With the exception of, don't look at the attendance numbers, please, but trust me, people are excited around here.
Yeah, I mean, I know this has been a very long-standing kind of topic for us as a blog and all. Dan, what do you think it's going to take for people to actually show up to these games?
I just think we needed to sustain a level of success. I think for a while there, there were a lot of, like, you know, first-round exits, or, like, you know, there'd be some momentum built, and then, you know, a disappointing couple losses. Of course, and a couple of years ago, we had the run to the national championship game, which was amazing. I mean, I think that was pretty much the peak of, like, what you can get in a sport that's dominated by one team. And that I think has had some dividends. I think the team, I don't have the attendance in front of me, but I know we've done a better job this year than we had, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago with attendance. But I think you really just need to build it into something that people want to see on a week in, week out basis. Compared, you know, obviously men's basketball just has this four-decade stretch of really solid play every year, and you know what to expect, and you have a figurehead like Jim Boeheim. The women's, obviously, Coach Q's been around for a while now, but they're just starting to hit a point where you can count on them to make a tournament every year and be competitive and, you know, play, compete with some of the better programs in the country. So I think they're in the right trajectory. The attendance, like, you know, we see this in football. You can game things however you want. You can, like, get one game spikes if you do some stuff. But overall, I think you just need to win. And the women have done a really good job, and I think they do deserve better. But as long as they keep on playing as they do, I think we'll continue to see incremental progress there.
Yeah, Corey, I mean, you are kind of new to this phenomenon, obviously. Dan and I have kind of witnessed it both when we were on campus and, like, 100 people would show up. To now, when we're getting, you know, into, like, the 1,000 to and more range, but you're still seeing just a low turnout. For you, as someone who's been to a bunch of the games this year, has covered a bunch of the games this year in person, what do you think is lacking from maybe the atmosphere that could get more fans in the door?
I mean, I think it's familiarity with the players and what's going on. I mean, The thing with men's basketball, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, this is kind of, like you said, I kind of have an outsider's perspective on this a little bit because I'm still kind of new to Syracuse in general. But from what I observe is you get guys like Tyus Battle and Frank Howard, and now it's going to be O'Shea Brissett, and you get fans that latch onto them almost immediately. It's almost like an immediate buy-in. Once you hear the hype around these players, you know, Brissett, for example, Canadian High School Player of the Year, got accolades surrounding him coming in. With the women's team, you know, they start 4 new starters this year. 2 of them are freshmen. Both are very good recruits, but, you know, again, 2 of them are freshmen and 2 of them are transfers. There's not much familiarity there. You know, you lose Alexis Pearson, you lose Brittany Sykes, who, are both very successful as of now in the WNBA in their short careers. And you lose the Day Sisters, and you had a little bit of that familiarity built that was starting to come together. And, you know, making the Final Four a couple years ago certainly helped. But I think now, and Tiana Magakahia, the star player, I mean, she's phenomenal. She even said, this was a couple weeks ago after practice one day, she even said, you know, we go on the road and we see their fans and, you know, they get whatever, 4,000 or 5,000 people, they be in, you know, pick a conference road opponent. And then Syracuse is out here drawing 1,200, maybe 1,000. And, you know, they take notice of that. But you got, like I said, Magakahia, who is leading the nation in assists. You have two freshmen in Digna Strautmanna and Maya Finkley, who are going to be very good basketball players. Strautmanna has really come along lately. You have Isis Young coming off the bench. You're starting to build that brand back up. And the constant in all of this has been Coach Q. Nine seasons of 20 or more wins consecutive. And it's just been what he's done hasn't gone into notice yet, at least in the general public. And the Louisville head coach, Jeff Walls, a couple weeks ago even said, you know, for Magakahia alone, there should be 4,000 or 5,000 people sitting in the crowd watching her play. She's a wizard with the basketball. She averages a double-double. She's leading the nation in assists. You know, they're going to build this program up, and they're all young. They're only graduating two players, a senior, Jasmine Nwaji, she comes off the bench, and Marissa Romeo, who doesn't get much playing time. She's a grad student. So this roster is going to be here at least for a couple years. So next season, you're going to, of course, look for that to improve. And like I said, the constant here is Coach Q. He's just been outstanding. He's without a question one of the best women's basketball coaches in the country.
Yeah, I think that should be enough, hopefully. But I think, you know, what both you guys kind of hinted at it, right? It's going to take familiarity. It's going to take, you know, more. Like, now that we're seeing consistent 20-win seasons, like, how do you get to consistent Sweet 16 berths? How do you get to consistent looks at the Elite Eight or the Final Four? Like, getting to a point where Syracuse is annually, you know, one of the 2 to 3 best teams in the ACC, like, stuff like that, you know. And I think that that's an overly high standard, but I think that that's what it will take with the fan base, at least. But talking a little bit about just this season in particular, Corey, what's impressed you most? You know, obviously Magakahia, like, has, you know, her really, you know, high stat line across the board. You know, she's definitely somebody who's in the conversation as one of the best players in the country. Like, for you, what has been the high moment, and what do you think is really carrying this team momentum-wise right now when they're on a nice little winning streak here?
Well, I think the two upsets they pulled off this season, Duke last week and Florida State a couple months ago, you know, that's 17-11 that came to your house and you held home court against them. You couple that with they started off 11-0, good non-conference record. Of course, they lost to Mississippi State, who's a national powerhouse. You know, they played three top five teams this year, and really the only one that really got away from them was the Notre Dame game. They lost by 15 there. So they play Louisville competitively, so you have to think that gives them a little bit of a confidence boost. They lost by 7, but Louisville, I mean, they have players that could shoot the lights out, and they rotate in players constantly that'll just hammer you down. But you go on the road to Wake Forest, and you come back to win. The last four games have really been telling, and this late into the season, it's pretty special because you do have tournament time starting up next week. Last Sunday, Wake Forest, they come back from, I believe it was a 21-point deficit in the third quarter to win that game by 10 points. I mean, that's phenomenal. You beat Duke by 3 on your home court. You go on a weaker road trip against Pittsburgh, and you win that one pretty handily. And now you shoot the lights out versus UNC. I mean, you see this confidence slowly starting to build. And, you know, this team is pretty well oiled in terms of chemistry as chemistry is concerned. I mean, my column on Tuesday that came out, Magakahia and Drummond, I mean, that relationship they have, you know, that's based on observation. That's why I wrote that, because those two joke around in practice all the time. Those two are always hanging out after practice, and I noticed that. So those two, when your starting point guard and your best shooter, your best three-point shooter, has a nice friendship going, that's really good for your team. And, you know, it works. So Q's found a way with, you know, think of all the things considered here. Four new starters, two of them being transfers, two of them being freshmen. You lose two players to the WNBA. You bring essentially two players off the bench, an Isis Young and Jasmine Nwaji, and you still find a way to win after tonight 21 games. I mean, that's pretty darn good. And they've had their ups and downs. They had a really down stretch. I think that Florida State game gave them a little bit of a hangover because they did lose at NC State and at Miami, two tough road games. But guess what? They came back to win three straight versus Pitt, Clemson, and Boston College. So, you know, they've figured out the ebbs and flows to the season, and I think right now they're peaking at the right time. And like I said, with the tournament starting next week, you're going to play, projected today, you're going to play Virginia Tech, who you lost to earlier in the season. You know, maybe they want a little bit of revenge there. It's kind of interesting how this bracket's shaking up. If it holds the way it did entering today, you'd have Virginia Tech, and provided you win that game, you would face Louisville again, who, again, they were very competitive against earlier this season. So I think this is the right time for them to peak, and they're confident. They've preached that in practice too, so right now it's trending upward for them.
I mean, I think to me that's a great sign for them. I feel like in recent seasons, now that they've sputtered into the home stretch, but I feel like, you know, the season's kind of been highlighted by a couple of big wins, and then they're kind of crossing their fingers for an advantageous seed, not necessarily a berth, but an advantageous seed going into the tournament. I know last year people were pretty pissed off, self included, about where they were seeded. I think they were an 8 seed last year when a lot of people felt like they had definitely accomplished far more than that. Bracketologists seem to have them kind of in like the 6 seed range. But, you know, these things happen. That's how you end up facing UConn in the second round, unfortunately. I know SU
almost happens every year, too. That's the thing. They run into UConn one way or another.
It's becoming that way, and I kind of hope that it doesn't this year, though. Corey, do you think that there's any chance, I know there is a slight one here, that they end up being able to jump into the 5 spot? Do you think that'd be a better path for them through the ACC tournament, or maybe a more perilous one?
That'd be interesting. I don't know, because I feel like they're comfortable where they're at right now, which they're an 8 seed. It's kind of hard to find that kind of confidence when you're seeded 8th in your conference. But, you know, do you want to play that tougher competition later or earlier? I mean, you're going to get it one way or another in this conference. I mean, just looking at the standings, one way or another, you're going to run into Louisville, you're going to run into Notre Dame, and right now I think their biggest fear would be Notre Dame in that conference. So if they can avoid playing that 2 seed, which is Notre Dame, if they can avoid playing that early in the tournament, and they can rack up one or two tournament wins in the ACC, that'll all but solidify their position in the NCAA tournament. I mean, I'm very confident that this team, I feel like they're going to take care of Boston College on Sunday. They're 2-13 in the conference is Boston College, so I'm not really worried about them right now. Again, I think the big concerns in this conference is once you get to those top four, who Syracuse has lost to this season. They're 0-4 versus the top four in the conference, and Louisville, Notre Dame, or excuse me, 1-3. Louisville, Notre Dame, Florida State, and NC State. They beat Florida State, so I think if they sneak into that top five, it'll be very interesting, because I would almost rather play that stronger competition, if you will, earlier to build that confidence. If they could pull that, if they get that 8 seed, for example, and they beat Virginia Tech and go on to play Louisville, and they either keep it closer, you know, God willing, they win that game, that's going to send them skyrocketing, and that's going to send them so far into the tournament, and that's going to give them such a great seeding. That might bump them up to a 5 seed nationally as compared to a 7 right now. So I think they could get there based on confidence in the way they're trending right now. But, you know, that's going to be interesting storylines to see if they pull that. They're an 8 seed now. Miami would have to lose. And right now Miami owns a tiebreaker, so it would be a little bit tough to break into that seeding in the conference. But getting that seed nationally, that'd be a different story. I think that would be really fun.
Well, I definitely hope they can. I definitely hope they get whatever path is best. I know that Corey kind of presented a couple different, you know, situations for them, and I think that obviously, you know, you're in the ACC tournament no matter what. I think that the more opportunities to continue to pad that win total and pad the resume are both great for this team. I guess last question for you here, just on the women's team. How do you kind of see them performing in the NCAA tournament? Obviously, we know that they're pretty much in at this point. It'd be very surprising if they weren't. They have that quality resume. Where do you think this team's ceiling is given, you know, all the turnover and how much youth is on this roster?
I mean, that's tough because there's two schools of thought when it comes to experience. And I feel like there's a lot of opinions out about this, but you either have this inexperienced bunch who's fired up and curious at the same time and unsure of how to manage this, and that's what Syracuse kind of is. They've flown by the seat of their pants pretty much all season, and they figured this thing out, it seems like, as we head now into the last game of the season. If they were to make the tournament and face that tougher, unfamiliar competition, you know, that's going to boil down to Coach Q and his staff and how his expertise and how his experience, you know, being in a national championship game and so many tournament appearances and consecutive 20-win seasons, you know, that's a lot of experience that Q brings to the table. So having him as the per se commander-in-chief of this team, you know, that's got to build the confidence alone in these players because they know he's been there and done that. So if you have Tiana Mangukahia, who, albeit as great as she is, she has had some struggles this season. She's had over 10 turnovers in 4 games this season, including tonight against North Carolina, and Syracuse is 1-3 in those 4 games. You know, she's a great point guard, but she turns the ball over a lot. You can't do that in tournament time. You know, it's a matter of hitting your shots. There's been some games where Syracuse has gone cold in shooting, and then unlike tonight against North Carolina, where it seems like they hit every 3-pointer they attempted, that's when it clicks for them. They're a very shooting-centric team. If they're hitting their shots, then their confidence builds. If they're missing their shots, then it kind of dwindles, and you start to rely on Amaya Finkley and Digna Strautmanna. So I think it just kind of depends on how they prepare. I think depending on who they play as well, I think the projection said they played Minnesota first round, which I haven't read too much on about them, but you know, Syracuse spaces the floor very well. Mangukahia has eyes in the back of her head and the sides of her head. I think that once they get into the tournament, it's going to be dependent on how Q prepares them. And, you know, should they perform like they did, you know, maybe tonight if they have a hot night of shooting, or maybe like against Miami where they went cold earlier in the season in shooting. You know, it all kind of is dependent on that preparation.
Fair enough, yeah. I do have some faith, but I always do worry about the team that kind of, you know, relies on hot shooting and especially hot shooting from the outside. I know we saw that kind of with the men's team last year. The women's team last year, too, is that if you're going to be relying heavily on outside shooting, you're going to have something on the defensive end. The Syracuse team does seem to have something on the defensive end. Obviously, there's room for improvement. Last year's men's team did not really have much on the defensive end, and that came back to kind of bite them. So,
And I mean, the way I'm looking at this is, again, 4 new starters, whole new rotation, figure it out, and you still pull off 21 wins in the regular season, assuming 22 should they win on Sunday. I mean, you can't take anything away from what this team has done this season, considering it's a brand new startup, essentially. So certainly, I would call it a successful season. And in a year where you're going to get 2 more pretty good recruits coming in, one of them a 5-star, one of them a McDonald's All-American next season. So this program in general is just looking up. And regardless of, you know, how far they go in the ACC tournament and eventually the NCAA tournament, there's nothing but positive to draw from what this team has done this season. Absolutely.
I like it. Well, Corey, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate the update. Glad you were able to speak about this team in a much more educated fashion than we were. And we did want to make sure that this squad gets its due, especially before the NCAA tournament.
100%, they deserve it. I try to preach on top of the mount here on campus, you know, this women's team is worth going to see 100%. And I hope people pick up on it. I hope the 315 picks up on that. You know, on Sunday, if they show up for Senior Day, great. Should they show the support on the road in the tournaments, great. Next season is going to be even better. So I'm happy to be here. Absolutely. It's phenomenal. I'm covering a great program. I'm very lucky. And thank you, John. Really appreciate you having me on this week. Hopefully we can do this again soon.
Of course, Corey. Thanks, man.
Yep, you got it.
Thanks.
All right. And now you have me and Dan once again. We back to jokes and garbage.
Yeah, that was way too much like actual information for 20 plus minutes. I was almost uncomfortable by how prepared and informed Corey was.
Do you see, that's the thing. Dan and I are informed. It's the preparation part that we usually fail at.
Pretty much, yeah. We both know what we're talking about. It's just what we are talking about might vary from second to second. And he was very on track and like was professional. Didn't bring up Tulane once. I mean, he'll get better. He'll start to bring up stuff that has nothing to do with what he's talking about, and you know, he'll learn.
Yeah, he'll suddenly get Southern Miss to bring back some logo they haven't used in 30 years.
I did want to say that you guys were talking about the post game show he was doing with Julian for a couple weeks there, and that was really excellent. Hopefully we can get more of that next year. I'm not sure what Julian might be, you know, running ESPN by that point, but that was like, you know, some really awesome informative stuff during football season, and obviously that was a great first half we had on the basketball team, the women's basketball team, which might be our best hopes as Syracuse fans this March. So hopefully everyone gets on board because it's a fun group.
Agreed. Please pay attention, everybody. All right, why don't we talk a little bit about beer before we jump into the whole conversation with Syracuse basketball, what happened on Wednesday night, and what could potentially, hopefully, happen on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think it's an appropriate topic after yet another super frustrating Syracuse men's team.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy, because I was like watching in and out on streaming, and then I watched like the end. I like hopped out quick just to like catch it on TV. I was not overly thrilled, but I was happy to see the really strong effort at the end of that game, and the way that they were able to come back, the way that the press, it didn't work to perfection, but I felt like the press, even this year when it doesn't work to perfection, it does work, and it helps change the tide, it helps motivate this offense. I think that we talked about this before, how well they play in transition, but I think that we'll save that for the second half while we dive into a little bit of beer first. So Dan, why don't you start us off? I actually drank stuff this week, so it won't just be a one-sided podcast.
Oh, well, we're going to have a long beer segment then. So I went upstate this weekend, not to Syracuse. I was actually in the capital region for a couple days visiting a friend who actually works at a brewery up there, which I mentioned before. He is the taproom manager at Wolf Hollow in the Schenectady area. So we went to their place on Saturday, and really cool space, just a kind of off, not super in like the city area, so it's a very local oriented spot. But a nice tap room, good food. The beers are really, really solid. I had a bunch of stuff courtesy of him that night. I tried probably 2/3 of the menu, and I'd say my highlights. My favorite beer I had was the Primitive Path Pale Ale, which apparently they rotate through different variations on it. This most recent batch was brewed with Simcoe hops, and it was really, really delicious. Just a nice, fully flavored pale ale with, you know, that what you expect from a really nice APA. They also had a Brunette Revenge, which is a interesting one. It's a hopped blonde, which I appreciated. I'm not a huge blonde drinker, but throw some hops in there, and it's not quite an IPA, but you get, you know, some of those nice flavors that, you know, IPA drinkers like myself like. That's off the Triple Jump, which is a Belgian IPA, which is quite good, and then their District 12, which is their double IPA. So those were all really, really solid. So if you're in the Albany, Schenectady, Detroit area, go check them out. We are not being paid for this, I promise. Their beer is actually good. And say hi to Eddie if you're there. And then I had a bunch of other stuff too, because we were, you know, in Albany. So what are you going to do in that area in February besides, you know, try a bunch of beers all over the place? Although a lot of them were from elsewhere. I had two things from KCBC here in New York. My favorite was the Hatch Job, which is a big citrusy juice bomb IPA. Really hazy and delicious. I also have the Bodega Cat, which is a wonderfully named stout for any New York City brewing. I was able to grab some Middle Ages Jester's Nectar, which is a delicious, really, really high-flavored wit. I'm sure everyone here listening has at least, you know, some experience with Middle Ages, considering you probably spent some time in Syracuse in your life. I stumbled on a couple things, big rare things from Vermont, a sip of sunshine from Lawson's, Lawson's Liquids, which really, really good. I actually didn't realize that they actually brewed that out of Two Roads in Connecticut, which I know Two Roads does a lot of contract brewing, but I didn't realize that is one of them. So that was an interesting surprise. I had Grimm's Rainbow Dome, which I hadn't had before, another New York City brewery, which is actually opening up their tap room soon. Which they make really, really good sours. This is one of them, which has like apricots and also some a nice hop profile as well. So it's a pretty interesting combo. I had another one that a brewery I was unfamiliar with from Asheville, Burial Beer. I'm not sure if you know them.
I know of them. I don't think I've had anything from them, though.
Yeah, this is the first thing I had from them. It's called the Massacre of the Innocents IPA, which was probably one of the best IPAs I had the whole weekend. It was a nice surprise. I was just at a really cool beer shop in Troy, and we were trying some stuff, and I just wanted to go for something I hadn't had, and I know Asheville's beer scene's excellent, so I took a gamble on that one, and it was one of the best beers I had this weekend. And let's see, is there anything else I can't miss? Oh, and Two Roads themselves, I had their Tanker Truck Sour Series, their Clementine Doza, which apparently they have been doing a bunch of dozas out of, and sours out of a repurposed trailer in small batches, and that is one of the most recent ones. And then I had a bunch of other stuff you can go find on my Untappd. It was a very, very busy weekend. Some Industrial Arts, some Southern Tier, but I'd spend, you know, half the podcast listing them, so you can go head over to Untappd and see all that.
Impressive. Dan, two straight weeks, just blowing me out of the water.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do it for three. I should probably, like, not. It might not be the best thing. But definitely a strong effort the last 2 weeks.
Well, you could probably pull it off. I'm going up to the mountains this weekend, so I just kind of bring my own stuff, so that's really whatever's around here, and then whatever my in-laws bring. So, no
challenge accepted then, I guess.
Fair enough.
Someone has to do it.
Yeah, since I finally recovered from Super Bowl, I decided to drink this past weekend. I had The Apprentice from Society Brewing down in San Diego, had a really good collaboration from Monkish and Other Half. It was called Spectacles. It was a guava saison. That was super good. Nice, light, just the right amount of sour. Really enjoyable. I stopped over at Phantom Carriage over in Carson for the first time in a while and had their Perchance to Dream. Kind of a New England-style pale ale, but not like overly juicy. It was like the right balance for me. I've been wanting to have this one since they released it, just the Scorpion Bowl IPA from Stone. For those who haven't tried it out, definitely say you should. It's a pretty good one from them. It's also like super affordable. It was like, at least at Total Wine, it was like $4.99 for your bomber, which, like, nice. Yeah, for me that's great. Lucked into finding a 4-pack of Citraholic from Beechwood, one of my favorite beers from out here, so I'll definitely be finishing those off this weekend. And then also had the rare treat, once-a-year release of Pliny the Younger from Russian River. Was on tap at a place right by the office that I work at a couple days a week. I had some untapped alerts ready to go on whenever it was tapped. Made it with about 10 minutes to go on the keg, so I was I'd say it was a successful evening.
Very nice.
Yeah, I've had it before. I had it back in 2015, and I missed the last 2 years, so still good. Still remember why I don't hate East Coast IPAs. I just prefer West Coast ones. I just really love hop bombs.
Yeah, I kind of just appreciate the entire range. Like, I'm not going to I'm not like married to either style. I'll appreciate them all, because I think there is I know IPAs are like kind of not falling out of favor, but I think there was a bit of an oversaturation, and now a bunch of breweries are going towards different stuff. But I do appreciate that that's kind of left us with a nice array of different types of IPAs.
Yeah, I agree. I think it forces people to try some new things and really stand out. So, no qualms here. I'll usually drink whatever you put in front of me. I might have some snide comments about it, but I will drink the beer usually.
That's generally my approach as well.
Fair enough. All right. Now to some things that might have made people drink. Didn't make me want to drink necessarily, if only because, I felt it was a pretty valiant effort. Syracuse lost 78-74 to UNC, ranked number 10 coming into the game. Dan, there was a lot to like. There was a lot not to like, potentially. What was your what were your kind of like 1 to 2 big positives out of this one?
I think we show that we're still competitive with teams that just have what I would say a much better constructed roster. Obviously, we all know that Syracuse is a pretty flawed team at this point for the season.
Right.
We have three guys that can score on any kind of consistent basis. We have a very short rotation. We're playing with multiple players who are pretty banged up. I'm not sure what Moyer's status is, but you know he and Sidibe can only really play pretty limited minutes. Moyer had 15 last night. Sidibe had 6. So it's really like a 5 and, you know, whatever you can get out of the other two guys, which makes it like, I know Boeheim put out all over Chukwu last night after a pretty rough end of game performance by him, but it's hard for me to really get on him too much because, like, he's just been thrust into such a huge role
right.
that even when we were entering the season, I think we all thought, you know, if we could get like 20 good minutes and 5 fouls and a couple altered and blocked shots, we'd be pretty happy, and I think overall, we've gotten more than we expected at Chukwu. The problem is he's like the 4th or 5th best player on the team, and we probably expected him to be the 6th or 7th. And it's just everyone, a lot of people, aside from Battle, and even him, because there's such an onus on him getting shots up and creating his own, that everyone's kind of being thrust into like a level above where they should be based on the lack of depth in this team. So all that being said, the fact that we have three guys who can score on a consistent basis, and we were within 4 points of a much deeper, more experienced team that, you know, ran 10 guys out there. I think that's a positive takeaway. The problem is it's kind of hard to take away moral victories when you're just battling for your tournament life, and at 18-10 and 7-8 in conference, that's where we're at. So it was very frustrating that we couldn't close, especially after we tied the game late. And there was that just horrible sequence of the Brissett air ball and the fumble from Chukwu, and obviously the Howard ill-advised three towards the end of the game, which sounds like it was off of because of a broken play, because Chukwu set the wrong screen, I believe is what Boeheim said.
Yeah.
So just a lack of execution down the stretch there, and we've seen that as a problem in a number of these games that Syracuse has failed to close out. So it continues to be frustrating because you know, I think this team very well may be playing over its head, but when you're this close to just notching so many other big wins that would have us in much better position, it is very tough to see, because it seems like we have one of these losses like every, you know, week to 10 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, like, you can focus on the big losses. I mean, not big losses, but you can focus on the losses to great teams, or you can focus on the losses to, like, you know, peer programs or programs that are just slightly lesser than us, or slightly better than us. Like, you look at the Florida State game, the Notre Dame game, the St. Bonaventure game as like 1, 2, 3. You win 2 of those, then this loss doesn't really matter as much, because, you know, now, okay, so worst case, you're 20-8. Great. Like, that you're 20-8. You have at least one, if not two more wins in ACC play. Everything's fine. You're probably looking somewhere around like a 6-7 seed in conference. Like, you're on much safer ground. The losses get magnified. You know, when you drop those winnable games, you can't close teams out. And again, if expanding that earlier list even further, you know, the first Wake Forest game, the NC State game, you're never going to win all of those, but it's frustrating when you lose all of them, as was the case this year. A loss to UNC, again, now counts, at least in our minds, almost double. It makes it harder to make the tournament. It makes it harder to really pick up those quality wins that now we need to get into, you know, the large pool. I think it's impressive for both these players and Jim Boeheim to an extent, that were even able to be in this position, really only like five healthy guys. That in and of itself is pretty wild when you think about it. And again, you look at, like, you know, just how one-sided this offense is toward, well, I guess three-sided. This offense is toward Brissett, Howard, and Battle. If anybody else shows up, it's really a nice perk. Dolezal, as we mentioned last week, be great for him to be able to do something with the ball. He did it against Miami. He did it here, too. You know, he went 2 for 2. He had 5 rebounds. Anytime that, you know, he's a threat in any way, even if minimally, it's just great to kind of get, you know, somebody else for the defense to focus on. You can't necessarily key in two guys on Brissett, Howard, and Battle all at once. Again, nice to free one of them up at the very least. Syracuse did seem to shoot very well when they were driving. Not as much from outside. Battle's 0 for 5. Brissett was 3 of 8. That's fine from outside. And then, you know, Frank went 5 of 10. When Frank's feeling it from outside, I'm fine with him putting him up, to be honest. And I feel that way about all these guys, really. And you know, they all can be a little streaky from outside, and they all do tend to settle for jumpers a little bit more. I mean, Battle had 23 shots, which is pretty insane for anybody, not just him. But in general, like, would like to probably see everybody penetrate the lane more. It did seem like the offense, as always, was running a little bit smoother when everybody was willing to bring the ball into the paint.
Yeah, I mean, I think this team always is at its best when it can attack. And I know, depending on, you know, what the refs are calling and what the foul situation is and how good the other team is around the rim, it's not always, like, the most, you know, it's easier said than done.
Right.
But overall, I mean, I think with the way that Brissett and battled it to the line and obviously they're not great finishers at the rim, but, you know, when you get to the line as much as Brissett does, especially, even though, like, we see so many just wildly thrown up shots, I'm always a bigger fan of this team, especially just taking it right to the hole. Also, like you said, they're not a great shooting team. I think the 3-point shooting's gotten better over the course of the year, but this is very rarely a team that's going to do much better than like mid 30% from there. And that's basically what we got last night, 8 for 22. UNC. Yeah, so we were 35% last night. We were 8 for 23 as a team. And Howard, you know, has really developed there. Battle, obviously, was 0 for 5 last night, which isn't great. But overall, like, I think those three need to attack. Unfortunately, it can't just be them. And we saw that last night where they took all 17 of the free throws that the team had. It was nice that they made 16 of them. But the fact that, you know, Dolezal, Chukwu, Moyer, and Sidibe couldn't get to the line once as an entire group is just not ideal.
Well, especially Chukwu. I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit. Like, yes, like you pointed out, he's probably the sixth or seventh best player on the team, and we need him to play like the fourth or fifth. However, I do think that if you're 7'3", your role is get the ball in the paint, dunk the ball. That is the only thing you need to do on offense, and then on defense, obviously get rebounds. I don't understand, like, why. Like, I'm more frustrated that he can't get to the line at this point than if he was getting to the line and missing.
Yeah, because I mean, they're at the end of the game, I obviously don't want Chukwu at the line, no, you know, hitting 50% of his free throws. But during the course of the game, I'd rather, you know, like you said, I'd be fine with him even if he was only hitting half his free throws. And I think for the year, what's he at for the season from the line? He's 61%. So that's pretty, like, that's okay. We've seen way worse.
Oh, yeah.
From our big men than 61%. But even if you said, you know, he was legitimately only going to make 50, at least, like, give yourself a chance to get some guys into foul trouble and have to be defended. Because right now, like, you see him on the pick and roll, and he'll roll, and the defense will pay just the least amount of attention possible to a 7'3" guy.
Right.
And for good reason, because our guards don't trust him. He doesn't finish well. He's missed multiple dunks. Like, and I'm not trying to, like, lay it on him, but the games that he has shown more of an offensive game, and it doesn't need to be like where he's scoring 15 points a game, but there have been moments where you've seen him, you know, have a little bit of, you know, take a guy off a dribble. You've seen him with some somewhat crafty moves around the rim. Just if he could get us like 6 points a game, it'd be such an improvement. And there are just nights like last night where he is completely shut down, and it's just tough to to have, and it's not just him, obviously, but it's tough to have more than half your rotation as complete non-factors on a night-in, night-out basis. And right now, I mean, I'm looking, how many points are we getting from those four guys in total?
Like, I mean, last night it was almost 90%.
Yeah, so between, and this is including games where they played a lot more and, you know, we were playing non-ACC opponents, but of the 69 points per game at Syracuse stores, nice, we were getting 17.4 total from Chukwu, Dolgai, Moyer, and Sidibe, and I would reckon that in ACC play, that number's like a good amount lower. So, yeah, it's just not a well-balanced team. It's not a you know, surprise. We've known what this team is for a while, but it makes it very hard to pull out games like last night's where you're playing right with a top 20 team and a team with, you know, a lot of pretty experienced players with May and Pinson and Barry and even Johnson who played at Pitt before. It's just tough to beat that kind of team when you're going 3-on-5 on offense.
100%. And, you know, like another thing you kind of touched on there that Bobby did a great article about last week. I don't know if you caught it. Just talking about how Syracuse didn't really play the foul game right against NC State. And that's something that wasn't just unique to that game, but kind of came to a head in that game. If we can't get our big men to the line, if we can't get anybody in foul trouble, you know, if we're not willing to put any, like, obviously we don't really have the luxury of trying to put people on the line, but I did, and obviously, too, you can't just say, oh, well, I'm just going to run into the lane and draw a foul. No, but at the same time, you can put yourself in position to draw fouls. In worst case, you know, you don't flop. You put yourself in position to make quality shots with contact, and then if you hit them, great. If you hit them and draw the foul, even better. I just think that this team is not necessarily capable of playing that sort of game, and it makes it very hard when you have your own short bench. If you're not going to try to shorten the bench of the other team, beating Miami without doing that, and we only, I think going into the final, like, you know, 7 minutes or so, we only had about 3 free throws. It's tough against a deep team to really kind of test things, and really kind of expect to be able to hang with them if they can just, you know, leave their starting five out there for as long as necessary because they know that you're probably going to get gassed.
Yeah, and I think it's actually impressive that we haven't seen this team, like, totally burn out. I don't think that was the problem down the stretch last night. I think they just stopped executing. But for the number of minutes that Battle and Howard and Brissett especially have played this year, like, it's almost shocking that we haven't seen them just totally fall apart and, like, lose these games by 10 to 12 down the stretch. Like, we're in most of these games, even, you know, against very strong ACC opponents. There have been very few. Like, the Virginia game got away from them, obviously, but overall, like, this team is not getting one off the floor at all. I mean, there's only been 2 double-digit losses, I think. 3, but Florida State was, like, double overtime, so yeah, it's hard to even... Yeah, you can't really count that. It's just Virginia won by 15, and it was way worse than that, and Kansas earlier in the year, and Kansas just a lot more talented. So every other game has been close, and I know that doesn't count for that much, but this team isn't that far away, and it is scraping by, and I was actually on Twitter earlier. I saw Chris Carlson and Anish Shroff talking about, like, the coaches of the year in the ACC. And obviously, I don't think Boeheim deserves it for an 18-10 team. But the fact that Boeheim's gotten this team as close to NCAA contention as it is, based on what we have, I think does say a lot about his coaching ability. He's really lesser coaches. This team would have like 8 or 9 wins.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you know what, like, him being a dick to media is always what stops that from happening in general. Like, last year's team, too. Like, yeah, last year's team had talent on it with at least two future NBA players in Andrew White and Tyler Lydon. But at the same time, like, you had a team loaded with players who couldn't play defense and specifically couldn't play 2-3 zone, which is, you know, the only way you really succeed at Syracuse. They suffered a lot of bad losses early on and were still able to, you know, be the first team out and would have been in if not for Rhode Island winning the A-10. So, like, to me, like, you know, he's never going to get that credit and whatever, but he does some better things as a coach than people will really see or recognize, just because I think everyone's kind of used to, you know, SU being consistently good. So when they're not, it's easy to point and laugh. And when they are, it's easy to say, well, you always are. So you know, why do you deserve special credit now?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And obviously you don't want to give, like, a Hall of Famer, like, that much credit for his worst teams, but the worst Boeheim teams, as we, you know, as well documented, are pretty decent. Whereas, you know, there are all the jokes about Coach K, like, coming down with mysterious illnesses when his teams aren't good, and, you know, other coaches have had these, like, crazy down years, and other programs have had these crazy down periods. I mean, look at Pitt, who was a very consistent Big East performer, if not an NCAA one, and now they would beg to have a first-round NCAA loss. Like, and Syracuse just keeps on cruising along. If we our worst teams are bubble teams, so hopefully this is not one of those, and we can have another miraculous Final Four run. I'm not super optimistic, but
I'll take a miraculous second-round loss.
I'd be fine with that, too. I think making the tournament would be a huge accomplishment for what this team is. And, you know, while this loss really hurts, I still think if they win two of the next three, if they win BC, and, I mean, it doesn't really matter which two, honestly. If they were to win Duke and Clemson, I think that would erase a loss at BC pretty well. But assuming that you can get a win at BC, which is not the easiest thing. I know we did blow them out earlier, but they are pretty salty this year. And then win either that Clemson or that Duke game, I still think there's a pretty decent shot, especially if then you can pick up your, get the monkey off the back and actually win one in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think if you win the Duke game, it doesn't matter which of the other two games you win, just because it's another road win. It's another big road win. I think this year's team, as much as we talked about the road struggles earlier in the year, I think they've actually done a really, really nice job away from home, actually much better than they have at the Dome, if you're really looking into it, and seeing how they've kind of played down to opponents or really let opponents that had no business being in it back into it while really testing teams on the road. I mean, you know, hopefully Duke is added to that list, but you look at Louisville, you look at Miami, there's a nice collection of road wins here. And that, you know, unlike last year, is not really a hole in the resume. I think, again, if you beat Duke, it doesn't matter which of the other two games you win. I think you're in, barring a lot of insanity on the bubble, around championship weekend. If you go 1-2 and that lone win is Duke or Clemson, I think you've got to do something in the ACC tournament. One or two wins, probably potentially one, unless it's Pitt. And then, you know, if your one win is BC, I think you've got to win two games in the ACC tournament to feel like good-ish.
Yeah, I think right now, I think that's kind of a good breakdown. If you get either Duke or Clemson, and especially Duke, and you get to win number 20, whether it's BC or the ACC tournament, I think you're probably in. I would, even if we just beat Clemson and BC and lost, I think that 20-11 Syracuse team with a couple of, nice road wins and a nice late top 15 win would be pretty formidable. I think if you beat Duke on the road, I think as long as you get one more, you're in good shape. And if it's just BC, if you only win that game and lose the other two, I agree. I think you have to get two in the ACC tournament, maybe more depending on what the matchups are.
Right.
Like we said, like it would be advantageous. We said a couple weeks ago, it would be advantageous to kind of fall into that 10 spot. But at the same time, you don't want to like sacrifice a chance to get one of those two ranked wins. So I don't know if there's a great situation for us to like have our cake and eat it too, and get the chance to pick up a quote unquote easy ACC tournament win by playing on Tuesday, but also nab one of these big victories in the late season here.
Well, yeah, and I mean the reason you don't want to just necessarily eye that 10 seed right now either is because you're still in play for like the 4 seed.
which is ridiculous. There's two games separating Clemson and Syracuse.
Right.
And Clemson is number 15 in the country and sitting in the 4 seed, like you just said, and Syracuse is completely out of the rankings and fighting for a tournament bid completely and is just 7 back. So, yeah, a lot can happen. I mean, if Syracuse was to, like, sweep these three games somehow, like, they could honestly end up they could get a double bye. Like, that would probably be – they'd probably be favored to get a double bye.
Yeah, I mean, NC State's slate is easier, but if we were able to go 10-8, I feel like we'd at worst be a 5, which is great. If we got swept here, I think it would take getting to the ACC tournament final to get an at-large bid.
That's also, probably right.
I also think we'd fall into the, like, we'd definitely be on Tuesday, and we'd fall into, like, one of those really, like, god-awful, what is it, like a 12-13? I think it's the 12-13 game. It's not a, not what you want at all.
No, we'll play Notre Dame, and they'll get one of their, like, key guys back, and we'll, it'll be just, like, the worst.
Yeah, like, Bonzi will come back. And
yeah, Bonzi, it'll be Bonzi's first game back, and we'll go for 30-10.
Yeah. Let's not have that happen. Before we sign off here, I did want to talk a little bit about Duke. Speaking of injuries, they don't know if they have Marvin Bagley. I am going to say they don't.
It seems like they're just not going to bring him back until they get to... I honestly don't know if we're going to see him before the tournament. Like, it's...
I mean, they really don't... Yeah. They don't, it's not like they, it's not like they don't need him. But, like, you saw what they did to Louisville last night. Like, they really didn't need him in that game to just take out the demolition derby, like, helmets on.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to say that Duke is better without Bagley. I think it's very reductive, and it's based on a 4-game sample size, and that's just not the right way to make a determination. Grayson Allen's playing out of his mind in the last 4 games without Bagley, so I think there is a decent chance that, however the offense has been restructured without him there, that it has really benefited Allen. And you can make the argument that, like, maybe Allen's role wasn't, you know, what it should be while Bagley was playing.
Well, the offense but is overall, being siphoned through the guards now, where I felt like before it was very much a Carter and Bagley show, and, like, Allen had to kind of play, you know, like, floor general, but not necessarily... Like, he's not a great distributor. So he had to do a little bit more of that, and Duke was going to play big. Now, like you said, they're not better. It's reductive. They're a different type of fine, to put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Carter and Trent's numbers are both about the same as what they were when Bagley was playing or during for the full season. Allen's are way up. Obviously, Bagley's are gone if he's not playing.
Right.
And then as a team, they were winning games by about 16 points. The last four, they've won by about 17 points a game. And those were all ACC opponents, obviously. That's against Georgia Tech, Vatech, Clemson, and Louisville. So one bad-ish ACC team, two middling ACC teams, and one pretty good one on the road. So all, you know, a decent run there. I think the Bagley thing is just interesting to me because he got hurt against UNC, and he played 39 minutes in that game. It was an overtime game, if I'm not mistaken. So he played, like, it just seems like a thing that must be lingering. It's a knee issue, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's just weird that he hasn't come back. But based on how they've handled it, like, I think he will come back. I don't think it'll be until the NCAA tournament, to be honest. Or maybe they play in the ACC just to, like, make sure the NCAA is in his first game back. Although, if you're Duke, you know, why not just did him some run into a 15 seed and you know, let that be it. But either way, I would be very surprised if he played Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't really see, like, unless they, like, tank the end of this regular season, I don't see them forcing him back. Obviously, like, he has no motivation to necessarily come back if he's hurt, and it's something that could potentially hurt him long-term because, like, everybody knows what type of NBA prospect he is. Playing, you know, a few games here and there is not going to change anything. If you're an NBA scout, you're just grading these guys in perspective on, you know, what they could potentially do. Like we said, I think this team is fine. They're just a different type of fine. I do think that, you know, having Allen being kind of the primary scorer is probably what they were more geared to do. Again. But they're plenty of fine with or without Bagley. Dan, do you think we stand a chance here? I know Duke has actually, again, played pretty well without Bagley. I think we'd stand zero chance with him in the game, if only because it'd be an easy way to get our bigs fouled out very quickly. I think without him, it's going to rely heavily on Syracuse being able to hit shots. Now, that's not too difficult against Duke, but... recently, they've been playing almost exclusively 2-3 zone, and it's actually worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, if only someone didn't teach Coach Chad on that.
Yeah, Jim, not the best idea.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, we definitely have a chance. We've beaten Duke. I mean, we beat Duke last year with a team that...
And the year before.
And the year before with two pretty middling teams. We've beaten the Matt Cameron. So yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I wish we had Tyler Roberson, but the Duke killer. But I'm not going to expect it, I think, especially with Duke playing that zone, because it is always the strange kryptonite for Syracuse when a team plays a decent zone against us. Unless Howard and Battle just hit like a ton of open shots, or Brissette, I guess. I think Duke, they're talented a lot. I do feel better about them without Badley. I know we've said that they like have been playing about as well without him as they were with him, but I think his size and his ability in the interior would have been a major issue for us, especially with our lack of depth. But either way, I mean, I'm not going to be picking any upsets. I think Duke will probably handle us pretty easily. But you know, this wouldn't be the craziest upset that's ever happened by any means.
Yeah, I mean, this program knows how to win a Cameron, but that doesn't really mean much for the current players, since none of them but Frank Howard were even on that team.
I'd be surprised if Frank even played in that game.
Yeah, I'm almost positive Frank did not play in that game.
I'm gonna look while you talk.
Yeah, but I think that we can hang with him for maybe a half. I think foul trouble is going to become an issue in this one. I think Allen's going to be able to hit from outside. I mean, I looked at some of the... I don't know how much you got to look at it. Ben Swain over at Channel 8 down in North Carolina, he had that great kind of breakdown of just how like aggressive this Duke zone has been able to be. It does look a little bit more aggressive than ours in many ways. I know he was joking that it was actually like a cool zone, and I did mention how, you know, Jim Boeheim is cool to some people, just maybe not Duke fans. But yeah, I think it's a little, it's similarly active, but it's much more aggressive. It's been able to limit opponents of late. We're not a great shooting team, so I feel like it could potentially have some limitations for us. But so the big factor here is going to be whether or not, you know, Battle and at least one of Howard and Brissette can kind of go off. I mean, we're looking at 25 points apiece go off if we stand any chance to hang with a very good offensive team in Duke. You know, even North Carolina, a team that we did limit offensively in the second half, still allowed 78 points to. So I think if we make that a conservative goal for us against Duke, I'd say that's step one to potentially pulling an upset, is holding them under 80.
Yeah, I buy that. I found the box score. Howard did play. He played 7 minutes. He had one rebound and one assist and a turnover and no points. 2-for-2 from the floor. This is one of the weirdest Syracuse box scores I can remember.
That was the dumbest game.
It was an amazingly dumb game. So my first point, which is the least of these, is that which Plumlee? Marshall Plumlee was the lead, led all scorers with 19 points, and he had 17 rebounds, which is probably the best game Marshall Plumlee ever had, I would guess.
Yeah.
11 offensive boards. Syracuse gave up 18 offensive boards,
yep,
and got 26. that's absurd. So here's, for Syracuse, we had two guys with no points, Howard and Daywan Coleman. We had Tyler Lydon with 8 points off the bench, including 2 of 3 threes, and I believe one of those was a huge shot and 9 rebounds. Then the rest of our scorers all scored 14 points. Mike Benajay had 14 and 9 assists. Malachi Richardson had 14 and 6 rebounds. Trevor Cooney had 14 and not much else, including 4 threes. The team as a whole was 11 for 23 from 3, which kind of tells the story of this game. Duke was only 10 for 37. And then Tyler Roberson, the Duke killer, had 14 points and 20 rebounds.
Yeah.
12 of which were offensive.
That game was so stupid. Like, I remember the end, too. Like, just an absolute, like, disaster. Duke got so pissed off about the end of that game, too, which was
Oh, I do remember that.
This definitely inspires me. I'm probably going to write an article for Friday about, like, the dumbest things about Duke-Syracuse ACC games. And because there's a lot of them. Like, there's a lot of really dumb things that have happened over the course of the last 5 years.
I really wish that, I mean, for a lot of reasons, I really wish Syracuse had been better the last couple of years. But if Syracuse had been better the last couple of years, like, the Syracuse-Duke rivalry would, obviously it's not UNC, but the Syracuse Duke rivalry would really be a thing, because those first two seasons when both teams were good were so contentious.
Yeah.
And now Syracuse has like really picked off Duke a couple of times when they absolutely shouldn't have, including some like weird finishes like this one. So yeah, it would really be more of a thing than it even already is. But I think it would be like one of those things that like even the Carolina people would be hard to like ignore. But now like Syracuse gets them every so often, but like Syracuse has been so mediocre for three seasons, the Final Four run aside, that it's hard to like really get the storylines going. But if Syracuse had been like their normal selves the last 3 years, like this would be a real thing.
Right, yeah, because now we're kind of, like, hanging around. Now we're in, like, pesky territory, so, like, we're on par with, like, NC State or, like, Maryland when, like, other than those couple years when they were, like, national title contenders.
Yeah, that's not where we're supposed to be.
No.
Yeah. As everyone listening to this knows.
Yeah, we can't be pesky. We need to move past pesky and back up to, like, you know, perennial annoyance.
Yes. I think we'll get there, but... You know, hopefully next it starts year. With getting back to the tournament this year, and then hopefully we don't lose anyone aside from Tyus Battle at the NBA. We'll see. And then next year should be a lot of fun.
Agreed. Dan, final score prediction before we go.
I'm going to go Duke 84, Syracuse 72.
All right. I'm going to go Duke 80... Syracuse 73.
Okay.
All right. So that sounded super optimistic, of course. I would love to be proven wrong. I know you would too, Dan.
Yeah, please do. I'm glad that we'll actually get to see this team too, because it'll be on ESPN. Yes. And the last one as well.
All right. So that was Dan. I'm John. Corey was here too. Please be sure to listen to all of it. If you have the hour or so to spare. But this has been Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.